This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the health care you earned and deserve.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, everybody. A happy Friday to you. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen, and we're hanging out with you on ESPN 1320. To those of you listening on the radio, salute, hello. To everybody in the chatty house, salute, hello. And everybody watching on YouTube.com/ESPN1320 and Twitch.tv/ESPN1320. A big salute and a shout out to you as well. Wish we were talking about a Sacramento Kings win. Alas, we have to discuss a 117-115 loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I got to tell you, look, I don't want to pander. I don't love to pander. I will. Like, I'm not above pandering.
Okay.
But it's not my favorite thing to do. And you know me, though. You know how reactionary I am.
Mm-hmm.
I am like...
Oh, you wear it.
I am... what's the... Hot and cold. I am North and South Pole, whatever the two, I can't think of the
yin and yang.
Yeah, I'm just very, no. Just very hot and cold. That'll work. What? I thought last night was not bad.
I thought it was hell of a game, Kyle.
It was a really good game.
I thought it was too.
Dude, we'll get to like in depth of what we liked and didn't like from the game. I didn't learn anything about the Kings last night. I thought going into the year, 51-31, they're a playoff team. That's about what they looked like last night. They had a couple of shots not go down. The Timberwolves made some tough shots. Julius freaking Randle goes 5 of 6 from 3 and makes a bunch of tough shots. Anthony Edwards hit a bunch of tough shots. All right. Like, I don't have it in me to look and go, they blew a 12-point lead. How could they do that at home in their season opener? I can't get there.
I think the reaction that I've seen is wild. Like, I put out my 6 quick thoughts last night, and I just got buried. Like, so many people were upset that I marked, like, hell of an opener. That was a great game.
It was a super fun game.
Like, look, the Kings looked so bad last week, and Minnesota looked so bad earlier this week, but these are two very, very good teams, and they battled mano-a-mano almost the entire game. The biggest separation was 12 points.
Yes.
And it was in the third quarter, and the Kings blew that lead so quick. It was, you know, it wasn't really a 12-point.
12 points in the modern NBA is more like 6.
Yeah, and it's not like, you know, it used to be like when the Utah Jazz got a 6-point lead on you with 4 minutes left, the game was over.
Right.
You were going to lose by 8.
Yeah.
Or 7.
Sure.
You were not going to win at all. It was over.
Yeah.
That's not the modern NBA. Mm. And so for me, like, I thought it was a very good game. You wanted the Kings to come out on top, like if you're a Kings fan.
Of course. Of course.
But at the same time, I think everyone should be really excited that the team that showed up on the court was really good and has so much room to improve.
That's it.
That like you can see the path to improvement. Like yeah. You can see it.
If your takeaway from last night is, man, they have to do X, Y, and Z better. Like, yeah, no doubt. There's a bunch of stuff they need to do better, and we'll get to it for sure. But that's why there's 82 of these games, 81 more.
Yeah.
The number one for me, it's process and results, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you'll see this all the time, especially like on basketball film Twitter. They'll post a clip of a certain set and maybe the shot gets missed, but they always say like the result is what it is. The process was good.
Mm-hmm.
They ran this play. It got this person wide open. The person missed the shot, but that's a shot that you feel good about them knocking down. This was good process. I thought the Kings' process for the most part last night was good. They absolutely have things to iron out.
Oh, no, totally.
But I don't have it. So if Keegan's shot goes down, we're all of a sudden deciding that like everything was great and nothing was bad? No, man. I'm a little bit down on Minnesota, but I still think they make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a playoff team, and it came down to, hey, you know what? Last shot didn't go in. All right. Next game. You get the Lakers, who you dominated last year. Then you get Portland.
Yep.
You can be at 2-1 by Monday night.
It's just sitting right. Like
I don't know, man.
They're fine.
Like, maybe. Yeah.
Hey, look, during pregame, I asked Mike Brown a very specific question. I said, you're having like a tough time putting your arms around this, is how he's described what mm-hmm. your team is, because you've had so many injuries and you're trying to integrate new pieces and you don't really know. And I said, how much are you going to rely on what you do know? And to me, that is exactly what we saw.
Mm-hmm.
We saw a coach that was like, man, I do not know what Kevin Huerter is today. I know who Kevin is as a player,
yep.
But who he is today as a player, who Trey Lyles is today as a player, I don't know what those guys are right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so 43 minutes for Keegan Murray, 43 minutes for DeMar DeRozan, 38 minutes for Domantas Sabonis, 37 That's minutes insane. for De'Aaron Fox, to like 27 minutes for Malik Monk. Like, he relied exactly on what he knew that he could rely on,
yeah.
And everything else was a mess.
Yeah.
Like, everyone else who stepped on the court was, like, they don't know where they fit into the puzzle yet.
Yeah.
And so, it's going to be on Mike to expand and contract this thing until he figures out how all the pieces fit. And for today, you lost by 2 points.
Dude, and I said ad nauseum going into this year, it's going to take a while for them to figure this all out. The fact that their game where they very clearly, you got not a ton from Kevin Huerter. It wasn't terrible, but you got not a lot from Kevin Huerter.
Mm-hmm.
You got not a lot from Trey Lyles. Keon Ellis had a super quick hook. I think he played 11 minutes. All these, those are three guys that are expected to be key pieces of your rotation. It was, like you said, the non-starter minutes were kind of a mess.
Yeah.
But the starting lineup and the closing lineup were both very, very good. If your game where it's like, man, day one of this got a lot to figure out, is a 2-point loss where you had a good look for the win,
mm-hmm.
that's a fine spot to be in. And like I said, I am not a pander person. I'm not I am a knee-jerk reaction, I'm going to overreact to everything kind of person. That's in sports and in life. God forbid I leave my water bottle in the house after I get in the car. Day ruined, right? No, but I just 48 minutes last night. I went, oh yeah, no, this is a good team. This is kind of about there were some gripes, but
yeah,
I thought the biggest like positive takeaway, if you happen to be Kings fan who is very upset or distraught at what happened last night,
mm-hmm.
we talk about the importance of Keegan Murray all the time. Since Keegan Murray stepped on the court in a Kings uniform 3 seasons ago, it was like, this is the dude. It's Fox, it's Sabonis, and then Keegan Murray is that third major piece. What does he become? What is his ceiling? He was outstanding last night. 10 three-point attempts,
mm-hmm.
17 total shots, had opportunities where he made plays off the bounce. I thought he had Naz Reid on him at one point, I think it was in the second quarter. And just backed him down and then hit a nice little turnaround fadeaway. Well, 10-foot jumper. Yeah, man. It was just like who is this guy? Catching and shooting? He just, it's super aggressive on the glass, 11 rebounds, really active with his hands, knocking rebounds out. I think the Kings only had 4 offensive rebounds. Keegan had 2 of them, and another one was generated because he tipped the ball away from Minnesota. Like, he was everything that you kind of want to see Keegan Murray becoming. I thought he was last night, and he was awesome defensively.
Mm-hmm.
It was about, if you're watching that game last night with the from a 30,000-foot view of this is game 1 of 82, you have to be thrilled with what you saw from Keegan Murray.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, like, look, the Kings do have a structural problem here with this roster, which either they'll fix or they won't. I don't know. But the problem that they have is that early on, Keegan Murray started on Anthony Edwards,
mm-hmm.
and he did an outstanding job. Ant-Man was like a non-factor in the first half. He had done a very, very good job of defending him. And then at some point, Julius Randle caught fire. And then, so what you needed is for him to go defend Randle now.
Mm-hmm.
And then Minnesota helped them out, because what Minnesota did was that they staggered the minutes,
yes.
Of Julius Randle and Anthony Edwards, which is a problem that they're going to have, because those two, I do not believe, can coexist.
I'm 100% with you.
Like, I worried a little bit about this with Kyrie and with Luka, but this is a different degree of it. Like,
Kyrie
sure. is one of the smartest basketball players you're going to run into, and he understands when it's time to go and when it's time to back off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that either one of these guys have that in them. And so what happened, the reason why Keegan plays 43 minutes is because they keep staggering these guys. And Keegan's like, okay, Ant-Man, oh, now I got to slow down Julius Randle. So you can see Julius Randle was on fire early, totally slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as they had to take Keegan and put him on Randle for minutes, then Anthony Edwards started getting going. And it was like this back and forth thing. I thought Keegan was so spectacular.
Yeah, that's it. Like everything we've wanted to see from Keegan Murray, just from an aggressiveness standpoint.
Yeah.
Took 17 shots, that's second most on the team last night. Hey, man, yes, mm-hmm. this is great.
Yep.
Do you want that night in and night out? Probably not. With De'Aaron Fox, you want to see him get going, scoring. There are going to be nights where DeMar DeRozan, who led the team last night with 18 shots, is going to get going. But man, the 10 three-point attempts was great. They went to Keegan for the win.
Mm-hmm.
Which was great. He hit 5 of them. That was the other key, is get up to between like 8 and 9 three-pointers a game and then make 40%+. I have, of all the things that happened last night, good and bad, Keegan was number one in the good category for me.
Oh, like, yeah.
That is the reason I will remain optimistic about the Kings despite the loss.
Oh, no, I agree 100%. And the fact that, hey, we need you to go defend a high-scoring 6'5", 220-pound guard, an electric guard.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, we need you to go defend a 245-pound power forward that,
yeah.
that wants nothing more than to run you over.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just his versatility is so incredible. On the defensive end specifically, yeah, really, really high-quality first game for Keegan.
Ant's first step is ridiculous, by the way.
Yeah.
He got going downhill a couple of times last night. That's like, man, this is. It's funny when you watch games in person, you can see the like stars. They just move a little different.
Oh, yeah. They're electric.
Yeah.
Yeah. They jump off the court.
He was really, really good last night. There was a point that it wasn't the Ant and De'Aaron back and forth that I was hoping we'd see, but the Kings were up early. The Wolves go on an 8-0 run to go up. I think it was 8-5. And then De'Aaron just took it on himself. Blow-by, layup. Okay, run is over. Next possession down. Goes over, gets to his little mid-range bucket. Like, that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then Anthony Edwards did that a couple times, too, where the Kings had hit a big shot, and he'd just come right back down, layup, and one. Like, man, this is two really, really good players.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, like, look, they held Anthony Edwards to 10 of 24 from the field. Like, that's
not super efficient.
Yeah, 5 of 15 from 3, and that's what he shot 10 of 25 in the opener.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good thing. The mm-hmm. Kings did a nice job on him. I mean, in the end, he ends up with 32 points, but like that doesn't mean they didn't do a good job of defending him.
Yeah, yeah. The other process related thing I loved last night, speaking of aggressiveness, mm-hmm. was Domantas Sabonis putting up 4 three-point attempts.
Oh yeah,
first time he's done that since January of 2022. That's insane.
Yeah.
That's such a long time for a guy who I was going through some of his old 3-point shooting numbers. He has made 4 3-pointers 4 times in his career.
Okay.
I forget when the last time he did it was, like 2021. He did it 3 times as a rookie.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Like, he used to just put them up, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, he's always been that kind of guy. Well, yeah. I mean, they started to bulk him up.
Sure.
And to make him more of a center, not a power forward.
Yeah.
So.
I will gripe a little bit. There were a couple times where he hesitated shooting mid-range jumpers and 3-pointers where I think he probably should shoot those.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, man, you get Domas going 3 or 4. Again, that's a thing that we asked for. I've been asking for since last year, and that they emphasized this offseason, and you saw it. They ran a play. They ran a play for him where, he floated to the corner, like that's where he was going to stand. Is going to pull Rudy Gobert away from the basket. De'Aaron drives. Rudy crashes. De'Aaron out to Domas, wide open 3 from the corner. It's a bucket. That's going to be there, man.
Yeah,
they need to keep shooting it. But that's where, again, result bad, process on the Domas stuff, I thought was really good.
Yeah, and he goes 3 of 4, which is impressive. The other thing that he did, I think, which was kind of hidden, Rudy Gobert in 35 minutes scored 3 points. And he went 1 of 2 from the field. I thought the Kings did an outstanding job of stopping the pick and roll, of keeping Gobert away. And, you know, again, he fouled Gobert late, which he wasn't happy about. Sabonis wasn't happy about.
Mm-hmm.
And he certainly was very upset with himself on the Anthony Edwards. But like, what are you going to do? He's going to score either way.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter. Yeah. So, but I thought his defense on Gobert, because like Gobert's got over on him a couple of times. Like Gobert has gone for 20 multiple times against mm-hmm. Sabonis. But not in this game. I thought he was just a much better player than Gobert.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too. The other thing I loved was, didn't love De'Aaron's overall game last night. I think he needs to be more effective as a scorer. But if he's only going to score 15, dishing out 11 assists to go with it is a nice little wrinkle to have.
No, I totally agree. And what he had 2 turnovers on the night.
Yeah.
So 11 to 2 assist to turnover ratio.
It felt very much like the preseason from an offensive standpoint for him. Or from a scoring standpoint.
Yeah.
Where it's like letting everybody else figure it out and I'll just pick my spots.
Yeah, I need him to not do that every game.
Yeah, you got to get out of that eventually.
We're kind of looking at like, hey, are you going to allow DeMar DeRozan to take all the shots in the fourth quarter? And I hope not. I hope that that's not where Fox is. Fox needs to like balance being aggressive and you know, assertive and not being like disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like this is Fox's team.
Yeah.
And he needs to go out there I don't think he had a bad game, but he also, like, look at all the other guys that had 20 points.
Yeah.
And points aren't everything, but I would have liked to have seen him go for the jugular late in the game as opposed to seeing what we saw from DeRozan, which is going to be one of the bad things that we talk about.
Okay, yeah. Let's get to that just right now.
Yeah.
That stretch from DeMar DeRozan, it started at 7:33. I want to make sure I got this right. 7:33 in the fourth quarter. The Wolves had a 1-point lead to 5:57, so about a minute and a half stretch, where it was just DeMar DeRozan doing DeMar DeRozan stuff, where he was working for tough contested layups, tough contested jumper. And I know that's his thing, but in that spot, man, like you were down 1, and by the time that whole sequence ended, they're down 6. And it eventually ended with DeMar getting to the line after trying to shoot another tough contested layup. But, man, that just can't... It felt like he went, it's DeMar DeRozan time. I'm going to take over this game. It was just not the time for it. If there's a minute and a half left and nobody's doing anything, yeah, then go for it. Go be the DeMar DeRozan that everybody knows and loves. But that was a weird spot. And, again, that's kind of the learning curve that we talked about is when does he take over a game like that?
Mm-hmm.
When does De'Aaron Fox do that? And how does that DeMar DeRozan takes over with tough contested jumpers fit in with the Kings motion spray three type of offense?
Yeah.
That was not the right time, FYI.
Yeah, I totally agree.
That out.
Well, that, and I also feel like he should have understood that Jaden McDaniels was defending him, who's an outstanding defender.
Got paid like $35 million because he plays defense.
Well, yeah, and he's like 6'9 with a 7'3 wingspan, yeah. And you can't get away from him. I mean, he's very, very athletic and mobile.
Like the prototypical modern wing defender.
Yeah, yeah, like very, very good 3-and-D defender. And the problem I had, I guess the one thing I will say in DeMar DeRozan's defense is if Fox had rolled his ankle or something, like there was a moment where Fox went off the court right about the 7-minute mark of the fourth quarter.
And is that when he took the knee to the knee?
Oh, it was knee.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
It was DiVincenzo. They knocked knees. And he limped off to the court and maybe sat for like a 2-minute stretch right there. And that's where DeRozan like stepped up. But what DeRozan should have understood in that moment was because Fox wasn't on the court, that now he had McDaniels defending him.
Yeah.
Before that, McDaniels was defending Fox almost exclusively throughout the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big difference between McDaniels and anyone else on that roster.
Literally anyone else.
They cannot defend like him at all. Mm-hmm. Like as far as a perimeter defender. I mean, don't take away from the fact that Rudy Gobert is a 4-time defensive player of the year.
Yes.
It's different,
yes.
Right? And that 4-time defensive player of the year gave up 24 points on 8 of 13 to your center. Like, Domantas Sabonis destroyed him.
Mm-hmm.
So, but my point is that DeRozan should have been more, like, cognizant of the fact that he was being defended by an elite defender, and he probably should have moved the ball. I also don't think Malik Monk was in the game at that point. And then Mike brought those guys in together to finish off the game. But yeah,
it's one of the, like, it's hard to ask this question. And I think I can't remember who it was last night. Somebody asked this last night, but basically said, in nicer terms, like, this is one of the best teams you've been on for a while. And what's that adjustment like? And that's something that I think we're going to have to see in over the course of, I don't know if it takes a couple of weeks, a month, whatever, that when he was on the Bulls, like, salute to Kobe White, but it was like, man, DeMar's the guy. He's the guy. They're down a bunch at Golden 1 Center to the Kings in the fourth quarter. They need DeMar to take over.
Mm-hmm.
And he can go do that. That's, I think, going to be an adjustment for him, finding out that, like, man, you don't need to do all that here. Keegan Murray's a good player. Domantas Sabonis, good player. Malik Monk, De'Aaron Fox, good players. And I, like I said, I know that's kind of a little bit what you sign up for. I just didn't think last night was particularly effective. Wasn't my favorite DeMar DeRozan game.
No, but I mean, at the same time, he led the team in scoring.
Sure, like, and he got to the free throw line a billion times.
Yeah, he had 8 rebounds. He had 2 assists. He had a steal. He only turned the ball over twice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's 7 of 18 from the field, which isn't great.
Yeah,
but
he didn't suck. It's not like, oh my God, they made a mistake. It was just that one stretch. That was my concern, and I think that's why it jumped out to me.
Mm-hmm.
My, not my only concern, but my major concern with DeMar DeRozan was, hey, are they going to get into these spots of games where he just starts shooting tough shots over and over again, and they kind of get out of their offense?
Yeah.
And that's a little bit what happened there. And it was, again, minute and a half. It's not the end of the world. It just, like I said, it really, really jumped out as it was happening last night.
Well, that and coaching DeMar DeRozan on day one and coaching DeMar DeRozan on game 25 when you have a much better relationship and understanding of each other is totally different. And I think Mike will learn when he sees stuff like that to rein it back in.
Yeah.
But he also will understand that if he changes the ingredients on the floor and goes back to a Malik Monk or goes back to a De'Aaron Fox, and the defense has to shift to those guys, it might free up DeMar to do what he likes to do. I'd also point out, we talked about this before the season, DeMar DeRozan goes 12 of 14 from the free throw line. And he missed 2 free throws early, and everyone was like, oh man, he got
it. It was like, welcome to the Kings, yeah!
caught the Sacramento flu, right? But the Kings went 28 of 35. They shot 80% from the free throw line. 28 of 35.
35 free throw attempts, bro.
The Timberwolves, 15 of 17.
Come on.
Like, that was incredible. The Kings were the more aggressive team, but the DeMar DeRozan effect is real. Like, he is going to get more free throw attempts for his teammates.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it works out, but I think it's a great thing for the Kings because if they're hitting their free throws it really does take a lot of stress. It slows down the game. And, you know, I looked, the Kings only had 82 shot attempts. But 82 shot attempts compared to 86 for Minnesota, then add in the free throw attempts.
Mm-hmm.
So look at how many more possessions they had than the Timberwolves.
Yeah.
And that's how you make up for your deficiency at like the 3-point line and stuff.
Yeah, they got outscored by 20. Oh my God, is this right? 27 at the 3-point line and lost by 2.
Yeah, it's not
thanks
bad.
Thanks in part to outscoring them by 13 at the free throw line.
Mm-hmm.
Cuts that number almost in half.
Yeah, that's how, if you're not going to shoot a ton of threes, I think this team will shoot more threes.
That is one thing. I don't think, and I want to get to our Jiffy Lube teamwork play of the game, a new segment we're going to be doing. I want to get to that here in a second, but that's the other thing that jumped out from last night. 29 threes is not sustainable in the modern NBA. They got to figure out how to get more up.
They shot 39 last year, but I'll tell you, this is
39 a game.
Yeah, 39 a game last year, and this is why what I sort of opened the show here is that the problems that they had last night are so incredibly fixable. Like, I expect Keegan Murray to be around 8 to 10 3-pointers a game. I expect Domantas Sabonis to try to get 3 or 4 threes a game, and De'Aaron Fox shooting 4,
mm-hmm.
that's not going to happen. Malik Monk shooting 2, that's not going to happen. But Kevin Huerter going 0 for 3. And Trey Lyles, again, going 1 for 3, that's not going to happen. In the regular season, when this thing is really rolling, those numbers will naturally come up because your shooters will be put in situations to shoot more. And for right now, you're still trying to drag Kevin Huerter and Trey Lyles along and have everybody learn. But it's not an easy transition, and I'll keep saying this. The guy who's really all the pressure is on is Malik. Like, Malik has so much pressure on him because he didn't know Keon Ellis was going to start next to him, was going to be his running mate with the mm-hmm. second unit until like 3 days ago.
Yeah.
He didn't know that Trey Lyles was going to be back. Like, all of these pieces are coming back at this one time, but it's that second unit that really hurt the Kings last night and got abused.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because Malik is playing with a bunch of dudes who haven't been there. And that's one of the tougher things.
Yeah. All right, let's get to our Jiffy Lube teamwork play of the game. We got plenty more King stuff coming up. This is a new segment we're doing, the Jiffy Lube teamwork play of the game. And last night, it was this sequence that I wrote down in my notes, not to brag, but I took notes last night. And I wrote down, like, there's been 3 or 4 moments where it's like, if this three goes down, the roof is going to come off this place. And then we finally got one in the fourth quarter, and it started with this Alex Len block.
DiVincenzo blocked by Lynn. He sends it back. Murray for 3. Cash.
I'm a little upset. Big shout out to NBC Sports California for posting that clip. I'm a little salty that they cut the clip off before the Murray response from the crowd. That's fine.
Yeah.
It's okay. No, that was just that at that moment, honestly, as we were sitting up there, you get the Alex Len block. It's on Dante DiVincenzo. De'Aaron Fox grabs it, gets it up to Keegan. Keegan hits the 3. Kings up 6. It's like, all right, they're rolling now.
Mm-hmm.
This place is rocking. This is where they pull away. And then obviously they didn't. But I think again, process over results. I think that's the kind of thing that excites you if you're a Kings fan, is like, man, you got Alex Len defending the rim. De'Aaron Fox getting the ball ahead. Yeah, Keegan Murray, no hesitation, knocking down a 3 above the break. That's good basketball.
Yeah, I totally agree. And what we're seeing from Murray is every single thing that the Kings were asking their players to do in this offseason,
mm-hmm.
he did. Sprinting as fast as he can down to the corner, hitting the crash zone, all of these things. He did a spectacular job.
Yep. Huge fan of Keegan Murray's game last night. And the Alex Len block leading to that Keegan Murray 3 is our Jiffy Lube teamwork play of the game. All right, we got James Hamm's 6 quick thoughts. We've got NFL Week 8 action. We've got other NBA action from last night. We got mad props. It's a Friday. We're having fun. Here on the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Leader.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the health care you earned and deserve.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
You play Blow the Whistle at your wedding or at a party, you're getting a show.
There it is.
I'm not going to do this on the radio. If you're watching online, you can't hear, but the Blow the Whistle instrumental by Too Short is what brought us back in.
Okay.
I'm not going to start singing. Rap it. He's James. I'm Kyle. The Kings fell to the Minnesota Timberwolves 117-115. Sacramento is now 0-1 on the season. Is their season over? 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320 on the Elk Grove Kia talk line. Should the Kings be tanking for Cooper Flagg? James, your thoughts?
Well, that's a tough one, Kyle. Because, man, he's good. And they do need that 3-4. Yeah. No. Like this.
Where does Cooper Flagg fit in this rotation? Let's talk about it.
They are perfectly fine.
All right, let's get to James Ham's six quick thoughts. If you follow James on Twitter at James_HamNBA, you will have already read these, but we're going to discuss them a little bit more in depth. Here we go.
How'd yesterday's Kings game go? Kings insider James Ham has six notes you need to know. Here are James Ham's six quick thoughts.
James Hamm, take it away. Thought number one.
DeRozan didn't disappoint. I thought he was absolutely spectacular for long stretches of the game. Yep. Like defensively, I don't think it was really all that bad. I thought he held his own. You know, he had to spend a lot of time on Julius Randle. Offensively, he scores 26 points, grabs 8 rebounds, a couple of assists. Like, look, this is exactly why you went out and got him. It got sticky. Mm-hmm. In the fourth quarter, and I think it was a learning process for everybody. But again, I think it's more than just DeMar DeRozan took too many shots or got blocked a couple of times, forced some things. I think it like plays into a bigger scheme that, you know, you need multiple players on the court with mm-hmm. him at the same time in order to draw defensive coverages and stuff. And the Kings were, you know, trying to get through their first NBA game of the season with a whole bunch of players that had never played before mm-hmm. with them. So, yeah, really, really nice opening night start for DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, nothing happened last night that made me feel differently about DeMar DeRozan on the Kings. And frankly, even though I complained about that little minute and a half stretch there in the fourth quarter, there's also going to be games where he has stretches like that and he's cashing everything he shoots.
Yeah, he did it last year against the Kings. He put up 19 in the fourth quarter and torched them.
Yeah. You saw it in the preseason opener against the Warriors.
Yep.
He had 6 for 6, and every single one of those was like a tough contested jumper. Yeah, I have no problems with DeMar DeRozan's overall game last night. He did exactly what we thought he would do. Number two.
Keegan is a two-way star. I thought, again, we're wondering what Keegan Murray, if he's going to get lost in the shuffle because of DeMar, he's going to be able to elevate his game.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that I saw last night tells me that he's on his path to being one of the better two-way players in the game.
Yeah.
And that's a really good thing for the Sacramento Kings.
He needed to be more aggressive shooting the basketball, and when given the opportunity, put the ball on the deck and go get a basket. And he did that every time last night. The 11 rebounds, the active hands. I would love to know how many deflections he had.
Yes, probably a lot.
I will look that up while you're talking, but I couldn't have been more impressed with Keegan last night. It's the exact, I've come on the radio and been like, hey, I need to see this and that from Keegan, and I saw both this and that last night.
That's right. And I will say this too. Shout out to Monty McNair and Wes Wilcox, because the Keegan Murray selection was not the most popular thing ever. And what they've done to like put him in a position to succeed is huge. But also the way that the training staff has worked with him and developed his body, and the way that he continues to grow, the way that De'Aaron Fox has pulled him under his wing and made him part of the family. I think all of these pieces, for once, I think the Kings have an environment where a young player can develop and become something really, really good. And I think that's what we're seeing from Keegan Murray right now. He's done a lot of work to make himself better. He's a very talented player. But on top of that, all of the pieces are in place to support him in the right way, where so many other young players in Sacramento have gotten lost in the shuffle because they didn't have this support system in place.
Last night was why he was a perfect fit when they drafted him.
Yes.
That's why it was the right pick. That was my take on draft night. You can look it up. I have looked it up. Keegan Murray, deflections last night in the Sacramento Kings season opener against the Minnesota Timberwolves. He had 0. Number 3. It felt like he had his hand on the basketball a lot. Maybe there were some that weren't technically deflections. He was poking away rebounds.
Maybe they gave him rebounds where he should have had steals or deflections.
He had no steals, no deflections. I take it all back. Keegan Murray stunk last night. Should they trade him so they can tank for Cooper Flagg? Now,
there we are.
Number three.
I thought Domantas Sabonis was really solid. He did not get a double-double, which is stunning because he had so many. And he only had one assist, which is crazy. But 24 points, 8 rebounds, 8 of 13 from the field, 3 of 4 from long range. He even hit 5 of 8 free throws. Look, this dude, just every single game. And if he's going to be this aggressive as a scorer, number one, De'Aaron Fox is going to have to fight to get over 22 to 25 a game. This is what you're kind of hoping for, this elevation of everybody, not just of the young players, but even the guys who are all-star level that can take another step.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about Domas coming up here, so I don't want to... I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but overall, we saw in the preseason that he was more aggressive scoring the basketball. I think we saw it last night. A couple of times he hesitated when I would maybe like him not to, but again, we're game one, learning process, etc. Overall, really nice game from Domas last night. Number four.
Fox had a slow scoring night, and something we've talked about. 6 of 14 from the field, 1 of 4 from 3, only went to the free throw line twice. I think he played a different role. He played the role of distributor last night, 15 points, 11 assists, only 2 turnovers. And to me, there are going to be nights where this is who he's got to be.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also going to be the night where, take the Ferrari off the blocks. Let's see what you got. And I think Jaden McDaniels had a little bit to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very good defensive player. But I also think that playing to your strengths in a game like that, where you know you're going to be defended, is probably the right move. Get to the painted area, find your teammates, set people up. The look ahead to Keegan Murray was spectacular, but he fed Keegan Murray on a bunch of threes.
Yep.
And when your team finishes a night with only 21 assists and you have 11 of them, that means that you were part of the solution. You were not part of the problem, regardless of how many points you scored.
Yeah, and to your point about setting up Keegan threes, there were a couple of times last night where he could have taken like a tough contested floater that De'Aaron Fox probably hits,
mm-hmm.
but Keegan Murray is not I don't know, Glenn Robinson III. Like, Keegan Murray is a legitimate elite 3-point shooter.
Yeah,
or at least he's trending that way. That is a much better shot. A wide open Keegan corner three is just the right shot and the right play. I'll be a little bit more. I'll have more of a reaction to De'Aaron's scoring night if he doesn't cook the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
The Lakers don't have anyone who can guard him.
No.
If he's scoring 15 points against LA, now we can have a bigger conversation about what that looked like. But I'm guessing we'll see the scoring tick up on Saturday night.
Yeah, and I want to add this too. Mike Conley went 2 of 9 from the field for 6 points.
Bruh.
Dante DiVincenzo went 4 of 10 from the field, 1 of 6 from three. De'Aaron Fox was defending both of those guys the whole night. I thought defensively, he was really good. Him and DiVincenzo, there's a little like love-hate thing going on there.
A little beef.
Yeah, it does feel like there's a little beef happening,
mm-hmm.
For whatever reason. And like you saw, they were going at it.
I don't think Dante's probably a quiet person on the court.
No.
He probably gets under people's skin a little bit.
Told you, Dante DiVincenzo is one intense
dude. He had the offensive foul with the little chicken wing to De'Aaron.
Yeah, but even that, I think a lot of people did not think that was a foul, and Fox did the Chris Paul move there to bait him and get that foul. So, yeah.
I thought it was pretty clear he threw an elbow up there, but
it's possible.
I had a bad angle.
Yeah. And like, look, I enjoyed like Dante DiVincenzo, the person, when he was in Sacramento, mm-hmm. for like that brief moment in time, but it did not end well, and he wants to torch the Kings every time he plays them.
You also noted that he's an intense dude, and he is, and booze rained down on him when he entered the game.
Yeah,
he probably playing with a little bit of an edge last night.
I don't know why though. He didn't do anything. The only thing he did was, for some reason, not get to start over. Holiday, like the Kings traded for him and Holiday at the same time, and he's coming off the bench behind Holiday, and it was like he wasn't happy about it. Like, what in the world? I wouldn't be happy about it either.
Justin Holiday, right? Or Aaron?
Justin Holiday. Yeah, I think.
Not Drew.
No, it was not Drew.
One of the Holidays who wasn't Drew.
It was Justin, I believe. Yeah, Justin Holiday. Anyway, like, his gripe, his beef was legit. It was legit.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he left, it was very strange. Like, again, the Kings had him as a restricted free agent and pulled a qualifying offer and allowed him to become an unrestricted free agent. Like, yeah.
Huh.
I've received some stunned phone calls from people around the league, but the phone call I got on that one that was like,
and what are they doing?
What in the world just happened here was like, man. Oh, I don't know, man.
Tough.
Good luck with that.
Tough. I also think Dante's probably a little angsty because he doesn't get to play with his Villanova homies. I don't know if you know that, but the Knicks have a bunch of guys who went to Villanova together.
I just feel so bad for him.
It sucks, dude.
This is a good spot
for
him.
Got the college teammates back. You're on a team that trying to go to the Eastern Conference Finals, and they're like, hey, go enjoy Minnesota.
And he was great last year for them.
He was awesome.
He was absolutely spectacular for them. Yeah, I feel really bad for him that happened. And like, look, he's a good ball player.
Yeah.
Teams around the league, I look at him in a very similar light to a guy like Bogdan Bogdanovic. These are winning players. They mm-hmm. are, like, he's intense because he wants to win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a no-nonsense dude. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, and there's nothing wrong with, like, teammates love guys like that.
Mm-hmm.
Guys who literally come out and play as hard as they can every single night, and you know, it didn't work out here in Sacramento, and hopefully it works out for him in Minnesota. Yeah. So
Soren says Dante's been on 5 teams in 3 years now. Well, he got traded to the Kings, right?
Yeah.
Kings didn't offer him, so he signs with Golden State on a 1-1, plays his ass off in Golden State, gets a bag with the Knicks, and
yep.
then the Knicks traded him as part of the Karl-Anthony Towns deal.
Yeah.
That's tough, man. just done nothing but ball out. He should probably be starting over Mike Conley, though. I don't know what Mike Conley does for the Timberwolves. Mike Conley is there to take the inbounds pass, dribble up the court, hand it to Anthony Edwards, and then go over there.
Go hide somewhere.
I know he hit a couple of big threes last night, so respect to Mike Conley. He's 38 years old out there getting it done. I think the maximized version of the Timberwolves probably has Dante starting.
Yeah, it might have Dante starting, and again, Rob Dillingham is a guy who's hiding on their bench who down the road.
Yeah, what a weird thing.
It's very weird, yeah. I did see, I was standing courtside with Mark Jones in pregame last night, and Dante came over and said hello.
Oh, nice.
Like, super nice. Like, yeah. Again, he's an intense dude, but
the beard looks great.
Super nice guy. So
we've gotten so far off track.
Where are we?
Number five.
Malik Monk picked up right where he left off. I thought Malik Monk was tremendous. And that's I've also talked about how he was dealing with the fact that he's playing with a bunch of dudes he doesn't know. Or that haven't been there and aren't there were plenty of moments where I just thought he was there to take over a game. And I kind of wish there was a little bit more of him. You know, again, not everyone is going to get, we talked about this, there's only a certain amount of like shots.
Mm-hmm.
So not everyone is going to get to eat every single night. And the fact that he came in off the bench and looked extremely motivated, he had a dunk. He just like embarrassed Joe Ingles. Like,
yeah.
He like got it in the corner, like sat there and dribbled for a second and made a spin move and bye-bye and then double clutch dunk. And it was like, what in the world?
I'm not sure Joe Ingles can slide his feet to stay in front of Malik Monk, James.
I don't think that's a good matchup for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah, dude. No, I don't want to say there's nobody in the league. There may not be a sixth man in the league who understands moments better than Malik Monk.
Yeah.
And understands when his team needs him to be the maximized version of himself. Like, he's always going to look for a shot. He's always going to try it and score, et cetera. But understanding, hey, here's a huge moment in the game. I'm taking this shot. Or here's a spot where, what was the game last year where he started to dribble inside the three-point line and then just, like, turned around, ran back to the three-point line and hit a huge three?
Yeah, I don't know which game, but yeah.
You remember what I'm talking about, though?
Yeah.
I really enjoy watching him play basketball. Just a really, really fine player. And again, 17-4 last night. No turnovers.
Yeah, he's just a really, really good basketball player. When Malik Monk is like your fourth or fifth best player, that means your team is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fact that he doesn't start, that means nothing to me. Like, what he's able to do coming off the bench is just spectacular. He changes everything.
Yep.
And I needed more of him last night, not less. Like, if he would have been the fourth guy to score 20 points, I would have been A-okay with that. Like, he probably should have forced up a couple of more shots.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Last one, number six.
Here's the downer. Kevin Huerter goes 1-4. Keon Ellis goes 0-1. Trey Lyles goes 1-4. Alex Len, 1-1. Doug McDermott, 0-1. The Kings got nothing out of everyone else that came in the game. They got a total of 10 points. And a lot of this is because Huerter was injured, because Lyles was injured. But it's really tough when, you know, most of your starters, Sabonis ran a -2, but the rest of your starting lineup all ran positives. And then you get to your bench unit and Monk, because he's playing with these guys, runs a -7. But Keon Ellis, -12, Trey Lyles, -14. And we're talking about in 11 minutes of action. Ooh. And so
-14 in 11 minutes is tough.
Yeah. So like, look, it's going to take a little while for these guys to figure it out. And I don't blame Mike Brown for giving Doug McDermott a shot at all, because he probably looked at the minutes he was getting from Kevin Huerter and said, okay, look, I probably am pushing too hard. Mm-hmm. I need him to like ease his way into this. And I thought Kevin played like physical. I thought he was good as he can be. Yeah, I thought he flew in for a couple of rebound mm-hmm. attempts, helped defense. He fouled a couple of guys, but at the same time, I thought it was like it was because he was trying, and I didn't hate what I saw from him. But they need more than 10 points out of that entire group, and just more of everything. And it will come. It's just, right now, that's why Mike Brown went 43 minutes with DeRozan and mm-hmm. 43 minutes with Keegan Murray.
I really enjoyed his transparency there,
when he said, I'm not comfortable with my rotation yet.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's not to say he's not comfortable with, like, okay, who's going to play with who? It's like, I don't know who I can play right now. I got to figure that out. Like, what is Kevin Huerter going to give them? Trey Lyles, I think they're probably pretty sure what they're going to get out of Trey Lyles. He's just not in basketball shape.
Yeah.
At least not game shape yet. But, like, Keon Ellis was kind of a mess last night.
He was.
It was, and I, he's not starting, and then he goes in and plays 11 minutes and has that sequence where he gets the steal on the inbounds and then throws up a wild floater from the baseline and yanked.
Well, and that was the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
Because it was that, and then the DeRozan, plays happen right afterwards. Mm-hmm. And so you have three or four forced shots mm-hmm. within the span of 2 minutes, and you go from right in the game to down four or five.
Mm-hmm.
And it really hurt them right there. And I don't blame Keon Ellis for, he did the work to get the ball.
Sure.
But he probably should have made a better play there.
All right. We were going to do NFL here, but since we're on the Keon Ellis thing, let's just get to this. We'll get to 49ers and Raiders in a bit. Not overreacting. It's game one. Keon Ellis, more than likely going to be fine and going to be something close to the player we saw last year, if not a little better. But if this is kind of what this is for him this year, where there's a game he's going to be super effective in 11 minutes, and then, oh, hey, maybe he has to play 20 minutes one night and he plays well, but it's just kind of an up and down thing and he's not a reliable rotation player.
Mm-hmm.
That's bad. Because so much of what we've talked about this entire offseason is like, Keon's a starting two, and if he's not the starting two, then he's this awesome option off the bench. And last night, he was not awesome. And it just, it dawned on me, and again, this not because I think that's what he's going to be. If I had to bet, I'd bet Keon Ellis is going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the first time I'd ever really considered, oh, what if he takes a step back? Because I've been operating like, oh yeah, he's going to take this jump. He's going to have another year, and he's a great defender, and he's going to keep knocking down threes and this and that. But man, what if he doesn't?
Okay, well, a couple of things. Number one, I don't want to overreact on one game, and I don't think he had a great preseason. I also, there's just something about him in preseason that looked different, and I don't know, and it's I think it's part of the reason why he's not starting.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he got a couple of breakaways. And he went up to dunk the ball, and his body looks tired. Like he wasn't exploding. When I watched his 3-point shot, all of a sudden he's taking like a major step forward on his 3-point shot and coming into a shooter, which is not typically what awesome. You want to do. Yeah, exactly. But like there are certain things that I feel like it's almost like he worked too hard this offseason and then got to training camp and was like a bit worn out. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm reading more into it, but he didn't stand out. And the reason why Keon usually stands out is because he has so much energy. And when he steps on the court, you feel his energy as a defensive player. I did not feel that at all.
No.
He was a step slow. He was running into screens and not going through screens like he normally does. All he did was foul everybody the whole entire, like he was trying to play physical, but usually when you're fouling too much is because you're a little bit slow. So I don't know what exactly happened here in the offseason, but I think that there is a very good chance that he recovers and he's perfectly fine.
Sure. And that's why I said I didn't... This is not a referendum on Keon Ellis.
No.
It is, oh, what if? Like, there's...
I'll tell you what if,
that's
Kyle.
That's tough.
Here's a real tough answer for you.
Yeah.
What if? Is that when Devin Carter gets healthy, he's not playing.
Oof.
That's the what if.
Oh, man.
So, I hope that that's not where we are because
I
really like Keon as a player and I like what he brings to the table. And I also really, I like the energy that he brings. And if something's off, they need to figure it out.
And I also think, I guess this is the other side of the fence. We talk about Malik playing with a bunch of guys he's not played with. Same thing with Keon. He's been running with the starting group, and then 2 days before the season starts, or 3 days before the season starts, it's like, hey, actually, throw that gray practice jersey on. You're with the twos now, and now he's trying to adjust to what that role looks like.
I totally agree.
Because by the time he started playing last year consistently, Huerter got hurt, and he was in the starting lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a different. So there's going to be an adjustment for him too, which is why I think for the most part he's going to be fine. That was weird last night. It was jarring.
It's kind of been weird and jarring the entire preseason. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm hoping he snaps out of whatever the funk it is.
Nice dude. 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320 is the Elk Grove Kia Talk Line. We've got Don. Don, you're on the Insiders with Kyle and James. What's up? Hey, Don.
Hello.
Yes, Don, are you there?
Yes, they just put me through, so it's Steve, but no worries.
Oh, okay.
My quick question to you is, Kevin Herter. You know, I'm not pro Kevin Herter. I know when he's on, he's on. And what is your opinion on that rotation? Like, I don't even know why they're starting him. And why are we using a real game to get him acclimated to, you know, NBA playing time? That's what the preseason is for.
Cool. Thanks for the call, Steven. Appreciate it. We'll respond to that when we get back. Why is Kevin Herter starting? Why are they ramping up his minutes in game? Good questions from Steven. We'll continue talking about that. We got a ton more King stuff to get into with you. We'll have some Week 8 NFL action, other NBA action, Mad props, all of that coming up in the second hour. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders, and we're sponsored by Jiffy Lube here on ESPN 1320. It's Sacramento Sports Leader.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the health care you earned and deserve.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.